This is The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega, and after 2 weeks away from the show, I'm really glad to be back with you all today. I hope everyone enjoyed their Labor Day weekend. And we have some new listeners with us this week. I want to formally welcome New Hampshire Public Radio. We're so glad to be with you, and we'll let you know this hour how you can stay in touch with us off air. We begin the show today with the confirmation hearings for Brett Kavanaugh, the man President Trump nominated to be the newest Supreme Court justice. The day did not get off to a smooth start.
I welcome everyone to this confirmation hearing on the nomination of Brett Kavanaugh.
Mr. Chairman.
To serve as Associate Justice.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to be recognized for a question before we proceed.
Regular order, Chairman.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman.
And Mr. Chairman.
I'd like to be recognized to ask a question before we proceed. The committee received just last night, less than 15 hours ago, 42,000 pages of documents that we have not had an opportunity to review or read or analyze.
You're out of order. I'll proceed.
We have been denied real access to the documents we need to advise.
Mr. Chairman, regular order is called for.
Which turns this hearing into a charade and a mockery of our norms.
Executive privilege has never been invoked to block the release of presidential records to the Senate during a Supreme Court nomination.
From Judge Kavanaugh.
This is the first confirmation hearing for a Supreme Court justice I've seen, basically, according to mob rule.
We cannot possibly move forward, Mr. Chairman.
I extend
this
a very warm welcome.
We have not
to
been
Judge
given
Kavanaugh.
An opportunity to have a meaningful
his wife,
hearing
Ashley.
On this nominee.
You, sir, have
Chairman,
labeled
I'd
committee confidential.
You should be transparent.
We should not be proceeding until we have a response, and these documents have been available. It is 102,000 documents.
Every single one of our colleagues in the Senate Judiciary Committee on the Democratic side have announced their opposition to this nominee even before today's hearing. So it's hard to take seriously their claim that somehow they can't do their job because they've been denied access to attorney-client or executive privilege documents.
Senate Democrats came out on the offensive, delaying opening statements by more than an hour. The sticking point? The Trump administration is citing executive privilege to withhold more than 100,000 pages of documents from Brett Kavanaugh's time as a lawyer with the George W. Bush administration. Kavanaugh is currently a circuit judge in the Court of Appeals in Washington, D.C., and would fill Justice Anthony Kennedy's spot on the bench. If confirmed, the ideological balance of the Supreme Court would tilt to conservatives, and with the stakes high, protests also punctuated the hearings.
The framers intended for the judiciary to be immune from the political pressures the other two face.
Judge Kavanaugh is one of the most distinguished judges. Mr. Chairman, I think we ought to have this loudmouth removed. I mean, we shouldn't have to put up with this kind of stuff. I hope she's not a law student.
I've got two people here to help me break down these supreme stakes. David Ladd is back with me in the studio. He's an attorney and the founding editor of Above the Law, a legal news website. Hi, David.
Hi, Tanzina.
And we've got Byron Tao, a congressional reporter for the Wall Street Journal, and he's joining us from the Senate Press Gallery. Byron, great to have you on.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start with you, Byron, and I want to talk about the 100,000-plus pages of documents being withheld. First of all, can the president even do this? I mean, even if these documents are not set out for public review, is he even allowed to prevent fellow lawmakers from viewing these documents?
So the short answer here is yes. They're claiming, they being the White House, are claiming executive privilege on this batch of about 100,000 documents from Brett Kavanaugh's time as staff secretary in the George W. Bush White House. And that's essentially a doctrine that says that sensitive documents, internal deliberations within an administration, can be shielded either from the public or from Congress or even in some cases the courts. So this has been a long-running fight over executive power for a long time. But by and large, the courts have upheld this doctrine, and Congress has pretty limited options here to force their disclosure.
Is this unprecedented in terms of a confirmation process for a Supreme Court justice?
Well, that's a good question. You know, the thing about Kavanaugh is he comes with an interesting record, and he spent a lot of time at the White House. And so his time there generated a lot more of these documents than, say, other Supreme Court nominees in the past. So Democrats are saying that it's unprecedented to have so little insight into a large trove of documents from a nominee's professional history. On the other hand, Republicans are saying that these are particularly sensitive documents that tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands, even millions of other documents have been turned over, and that the public has a pretty good idea of who Brett Kavanaugh is, even without this trove of about 100,000 documents.
Well, I would argue that a Supreme Court appointment is also a pretty sensitive thing for the American public. David, I'm curious about, the National Archives have released some of the documents from his time in the Bush White House. What have you seen so far? What have we learned?
So, thus far, Tanzina, we haven't seen anything terribly exciting, I think, in these documents. We have seen Kavanaugh providing advice to the president and his President Bush, that is, and his administration, as we expected. There are many documents, as we were just discussing, that are shielded by executive privilege. For example, Kavanaugh commenting on judicial nominations, like the one that he now has. But we haven't seen any sort of smoking guns in the documents so far. There's nothing that has been released to date that strikes me as something disqualifying or that will really provide enough ammunition to opponents of Judge Kavanaugh.
Mm. Byron, the Republican majority in the Senate is, I mean, I don't think you can get any slimmer than a 50-49 now that John McCain has passed. That leaves Majority Leader Mitch McConnell with very little room for error. Who are the key votes here, Byron?
So on the Republican side, the two key votes to watch are Susan Collins of Maine and Lisa Murkowski of Alaska. Both of them broadly are pro-abortion rights and have been seeking assurances from Kavanaugh on the topic. Now, Kavanaugh has said in some of these meetings with senators that he believes Roe v. Wade is settled law, but that's something that other nominees in the past have said, and he's by and large avoided commenting directly on cases or controversies, as is tradition with other nominees. So it's really unclear how he would rule on an abortion case that came before him. But those are definitely the two senators to watch, and that's the key issue on the Republican side.
David, give us a little bit of the background on Kavanaugh. We mentioned some of it, the top line, really, at the top of the show. But what kind of justice would he be, or is he expected to be, on the bench? And how would he fill the Kennedy shoes? I mean, Kennedy was a swing vote. Can we expect Kavanaugh to be a swing vote if confirmed?
So I think that a Justice Kavanaugh would be a much less of a swing vote than Justice Kennedy, for whom he actually clerked many years ago. He has an impeccable resume. He graduated from Yale College, a law school. He clerked for the Supreme Court for Justice Kennedy. He was a partner at a law firm. He served in the Bush administration. He's been a judge on the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals for now about a dozen years. In terms of his record, it is staunchly conservative. Less room for divergence, I would say, than Justice Kennedy. If you look at Judge Kavanaugh's 300 or so opinions during his dozen years on the appeals court, you will see mainly what we would regard as staunchly conservative rulings. Even though I think Judge Kavanaugh and many others will say, well, I'm not really conservative or liberal, I'm just calling the cases as I see them. But by conventional standards, this is a judge with a very conservative viewpoint.
Now, we're not in a conventional moment right now, politically, if you will. I mean, the president, David, is under, to put it lightly, tremendous scrutiny there. His campaign is being investigated by a special counsel. Several of his associates have pled guilty. Some Democrats are suggesting that the convictions of Paul Manafort and Michael Cohen mean that the Senate should hold off on voting for Kavanaugh until the special counsel investigation into Trump is over. I don't even know if that's realistic to assume right now, but just what is your sense of that argument? How far do you think that's really going to go?
So the opponents of that argument say that this is really about the institutional power of the presidency as opposed to the particular occupant at any given point in time. So this is the argument that's used against that. And as a practical matter, I think you're right, or people are right to suggest that it's not terribly realistic because, as you were saying, the Republicans have a majority. It's a narrow majority, but it is a majority. And so there is very little ammunition that the Democrats have, whether procedurally or in terms of substance, to prevent these hearings from going forward or to prevent confirmation unless, and there's always an outside chance of this, I would say 90-10 that he'll be confirmed, but what if he says something, he has a bad response to a question and it goes viral, which happened to a lower court nominee. I doubt it will happen. Judge Kavanaugh is a very, very brilliant guy and he's been extremely well prepared, but you never know.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about the Supreme Court Justice nominee Brett Kavanaugh, and David Latt of Above the Law and Byron Tao of The Wall Street Journal are here with me helping to break this down. David, another thing we know about Brett Kavanaugh is that he has indicated that he believes that a sitting president cannot be indicted while in office. Given the political situation today with the president's administration being investigated and all these other issues that are coming to light, what does that mean, or what would that mean, to have someone like Kavanaugh in a Supreme Court seat?
So I actually don't know that it is as problematic as some might think. One issue is that there are Justice Department regulations which currently provide that the Justice Department is not going to indict a president. And special counsel Robert Mueller has indicated he will abide by those recommendations. So in some ways, although it's interesting and perhaps controversial, whether Judge Kavanaugh or Justice Kavanaugh thinks that a president can be indicted is a little bit of an academic point, because I really don't think that Mueller would do that. But I think the second point that others have made and that I agree with is when it comes to these sort of showdowns between the president and the Supreme Court, the Supreme Court doesn't like to look very partisan. The Nixon case, United States versus Nixon, where the court held that Nixon had to give up basically, you know, tapes, other information, that was unanimous. And I think that Chief Justice Roberts, who tries to keep the court above politics, we can debate whether he's done that, but I think he would be very, very reluctant to have a 5-4 split. I think they would try to cobble together some kind of ruling that would get more than 5 votes.
I want to bring up a name here, Merrick Garland. Can you tell us about the different, I'd love to hear both of your thoughts on this, about the sort of different approaches or the politics behind what happened to Garland and what's happening now with Kavanaugh. What's the difference? I mean, that seemed to be pretty obstructive on the part of the Republicans. David?
Well, I think the difference is who has the majority in the Senate. I think that Judge Garland should have received a hearing. He did not receive a hearing when he was nominated by President Obama to replace the late Justice Scalia. But that was really just a function of politics and Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell saying, I'm not going to hold a hearing until after the election. So I think in some ways it is just about power.
Thank you so much. David Latt is the founding editor of Above the Law, and Byron Tao is a congressional reporter with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
And today we have big news out of Arizona. Governor Doug Ducey has named a replacement for the late Senator John McCain.
As I contemplated who could best serve our state in the U.S. Senate, I kept coming back to one name and one person, John Kyle.
John Kyle will be more familiar with the role than most. He served as a senator for Arizona from 1995 to 2013 with a solidly conservative voting record. Republicans have been under pressure to name McCain's replacement to give Supreme Court Justice nominee Brett Kavanaugh a better chance in a Senate with a razor-thin margin. Kyle is already involved in the confirmation process. Back in August, Fox News reported that he had been helping Kavanaugh by setting up meetings with senators and coaching him through the steps. And if all goes according to plan, John Kyle will be in place before the full Senate votes on Kavanaugh.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.